Hi, film fans. Welcome along to this week's episode of Soundtracking with me, Edith Bowman. Thank you so much for joining me for another episode as we dive into the world of film and music and explore and celebrate its beautiful relationship. Thank you so much on all your comments on a couple of the past previous episodes. We've had a, as you'd expect, tremendous amount of response from Taika's episode, which we really loved, but also last week's episode, which was one part, Felix White and Barney Douglas talking about their fantastic film, McEnroe. And the second part, of course, was Carrie Cracknell talking about her adaptation of Jane Austen's Persuasion. Really lovely to get your feedback on it, and please feel free to get in touch with us, whatever you want to talk about. The best way of doing that is our email address, which is info@edithbowman.com. In fact, I have a couple of lovely correspondents for you right now. The first of those comes from a gentleman who has some recommendations, Liam Martin. Thank you for your email, Liam in Brighton. Huge, huge, huge fan of the podcast. Thanks, Liam. Just dropping a quick request for dream interviewees. Two of those, in fact. Would love to hear chats with Cristobal Tapia de Villa, Chilean Canadian composer who did the utterly bonkers score for Channel 4's Utopia, as well as The White Lotus, Humans, Black Mirror, National Treasure, and more. And Segun Akinola, British Nigerian composer who scored Doctor Who the past few years, taking the reins after Murray Gold's 13-year run in 2018. His final episode is this autumn, so perfect time for a chat with him. I definitely will. I'm going to get onto that right now, Liam, to chat to Cristobal and Segun. So please stay with us as we try and make that happen for you. Thank you so much as well to Brent Billings, who just sent us a really lovely email about the podcast. He says, thank you so much for the work you put into the podcast. He goes into really lovely things, which I no need to replay to you guys right now. But what he does say is the depth of knowledge in the world of music brings an extra layer of enjoyment to my film experiences. Thanks again. Thank you, Brent, for getting in touch. If you do want to get in touch then, info@edithbowman.com is the email address. Now, what I've loved that we've been able to do every now and again in certain episodes of Soundtracking is where we speak to both the director of the film and their composer, which is exactly what we have in store for you today. Charlotte Colbert and friend of the show, Clint Mansell, have combined to great effect on She Will, Charlotte's unsettling little gem of a movie in which an aging film star heads to a retreat in the Scottish countryside and encounters mysterious forces emerging from the land that allow her to explore things from her past. Clint's score captures the tone of this film perfectly because what I think is one of the many brilliant things about this film is it doesn't comfortably fit in one genre. We'll begin with his opening cue from She Will. This is Evocation. Doing this, both of you, so great.
Thanks so much.
Sorry, I'm late.
Hey, it's all right. It's worth waiting for, mate. Always worth waiting for. Congratulations on this film. I loved it. I think it's extraordinary. I think there's so many. I won't lie, Charlotte. I was in the pub with Clint the other night, and I was waxing lyrical about it with him. So, congratulations. It's so good. And Clint, before we get on to talking about music, Charlotte, do you mind talking about the kind of the essence of the story and you know, writing it with Kitty and where the kind of story came from? Because there's so much in it. There's so many kind of touches on lots of different things, I think, which every time I think about it, there's something else kind of throws up for me.
Thank you so much. It's amazing when, you know, that it resonates with you and when it resonates with someone. Like when we first reached out to Clint, I was like, it's a miracle. Yeah, so basically Kitty had this amazing sort of strange story, and one of our execs, Ed Clark, said, "You two are mad enough to get on. Let's put you in a room together and try and figure this out." And yeah, it sort of developed. She had the sort of idea of this revenge story, and then we really brought in a lot of the nature and the power of the land, and that kind of idea of the sort of psychological DNA that we carry within us. The kind of muscle memory of trauma and the way that trauma blurs, I guess, time and space and sort of developed it like that, the sort of narrative very sort of collaboratively.
Did you write it with any specific actors in mind? Because when you watch it and you see Alice in particular, you can't imagine it being anyone else.
Yeah, Alice was sort of like a godsend. She's sort of completely, she's a magical person. Like if you meet her, she's really carries that sort of connection to something cosmic. Like she sort of walks into a room and she's got that incredible sort of presence, and I think she just really got it, you know. And it's been funny with this project and this film, because well, I guess it's the same for anything, but it has really attracted sort of kindred spirits. Like I feel everyone's who's sort of been in front or behind the camera has sort of had that thing of not quite trusting reality or probing things just beyond and like pushing the boundaries a little bit, or kind of, you know, these beliefs of dreams and sort of this uncertainty of where our reality lies, which I guess has been sort of exacerbated by everything that's been going on for the last 2-3 years. But yeah, so Alice is completely amazing. And actually in between takes at night, she'd be sort of doing these amazing energetic dances and choreographies in the forest to conjure like that kind of, you know, sort of potency that she sort of carries within herself. And Kota's amazing as well.
One of the things that I was really thinking about, there's something that's kind of stuck with me, was that kind of this sort of the expiry of trauma, you know, in terms of it doesn't really expire, you know, in terms of that idea that, all right, it might have happened X number of years, something might have happened to you X number of years ago, but just how it almost kind of still lives in you in some way, shape or form. And I think the way that you've approached that whole subject matter in the film is incredible and very, very powerful.
It's so I'm so glad you say that, because I find like with trauma often people say, why do they come out now after so long or whatever, and you sort of think it takes so long to be strong enough to confront something that it's always interesting how could someone, you know, deal with it straight away. Is it would require like so much maturity and distance from the actual event that happened. But it's true, it's that idea of sort of how all ourselves, like the childhood you and the childhood Clint and the child me, are all like hanging out in this space together at the same time as our old selves. And there's something quite interesting about how they all carry each other.
Yeah, definitely. And also I think what's so clever and brilliant, both in terms of, I guess part of that's down to the script, but the score comes into that, and also just how you shot it, is that you kind of almost experiencing things and learning the story as it's happening. So it's not kind of, it's so beautifully kind of unveiling itself, the story as we go through it. It's quite hard to describe the film. I don't think it does it justice by any shape or form by saying it's a horror film, because it's not at all, I don't think. It's kind of, you're not sure what it is to start with. And I love that. And that's so refreshing, to kind of start watching something and you have no idea what it is, and you're there, you're hooked, you can't wait to kind of get on the journey and see what happens.
That's really, really kind of you. And also, like, I think Clint was amazing, because he brought, basically really developed like the score is really like a character, mm-hmm. and a voice of like people past meeting the present. So he sort of managed to bridge all the different elements and create this kind of sort of cosmic goo that keeps it all all together.
King of cosmic goo. You need that on the t-shirt. I love that. Both of you, actually, I mean, Clint, when you first spoke to Charlotte about the project, what was it that you felt about it, saw about it, that you wanted to get involved? And Charlotte, both for you as well, what kind of question around, did you know what you wanted from your score? Did you, you know, where were you going from it? Clint, do you want to pick up on yours first?
The first thing that, you know, was that I was really blown away by the film. You know, I watched it like three times in a row, back to back, when I first got it. You know, the film was in quite an advanced state then. You know, it was very watchable. You know, there was a strong temp score on it.
Your favorite.
I mean, but yeah, I mean, it was. I mean, it was a bit intimidating actually, because the everything worked. You know, you kind of then got to tear it down to sort of really find it. You know, there's such a lot of films made, a lot of content is out there these days, and I'm, you know, I'm very fortunate that I get to work regularly, so you know, I get asked to do a lot of stuff, and you're kind of always hoping and waiting for things that just sort of come and surprise you, you know, that come out of left field. And you know, and this film was just something very different, just from, yes, the story is sort of different, but just from the female lead, an older woman lead, is so rare these days. And
yeah,
that was very appealing to me, just because it's different. You know, I mean, obviously add to that it was a great story and a great film, but all these sort of elements were what excited me about it. And also as well, you know, there was an opportunity to really, I felt, do something different, find something different. The film could take it. I loved the feeling of the land, you know, the feeling of the past, the revenge story, you know, the retribution, and the strength that comes from these characters coming together. You know, Alice's character, you know, is understandably hardened and bitter at the start of the film, and she grows with the experience that she's going through with the land, you know, and all that stuff. It just seemed very rich for what you could do musically. You know, I mean, I tend to not get too excited about, you know, I mean, I don't do action films, for instance. You know, they do, because, you know, they kind of do what they got to do musically, and that's fine. You know, I'm down the cinema in the 4DX seat watching Spider-Man, you know, and it's all, you know, it's great. But that to me isn't sort of an opportunity to write the sort of music I like to write, you know. And this film was, you know, just dripping with that, really, of this chance to become part of the DNA of the film and the story, and just really weave in there, you know. And Charlotte had some very specific thoughts on the score, you know, particularly the vocal, mm-hmm. and a choral element, you know, which I took a bit of time getting to, but, you know, it was just all these ideas she had were basically just providing this rich palette from musically that I could sort of bounce off, you know. Thank you.
beautiful marriage as well. Some elements within the film that combine the, you know, the audio as well as the music sort of thing, like the sound of the train. So something sort of really sort of thriller about the sound of a train, I think. It kind of, it's almost an instant sort of, I don't know, it's got its own sort of soundtrack in a way, kind of the train sets that up. And then that cue at the window with the rain and that combination of the strings and the voices, it's just like, it's so...
Well, it's the cinematography as well. The look is so... You know, cinematic, I suppose, is what you would call it. But from a musical point of view, there was a lot to marry together, you know. And also as well, you know, it's not sort of telling you this and telling you that. It's sort of ephemeral in some ways. It's feelings as well as story, you know. And that just gives you this extra dimension to sort of lean into with the music.
Interesting as well, because even before we know anything, you've got the kind of music and sound that starts, which is such a delicate thing to kind of to start with, because you don't want it, like you say, to kind of go, so this is what's going to happen, or this is what it is. You know, that's such a delicate thing, isn't it? Particularly right at the start when we haven't really seen anything. It's setting the mood, or is it? And
it's just, you sort of want to set the mood, but you don't want to tip your hand either, you know, without sort of, you know, stating too obviously what this is, you know. And there are elements of horror to it, but in a way of, like, you know, like, I mean, horror movies have become different things in this day and age. They, you know, they're either gory or slasher with loud 200 decibel hits that make you jump scares and stuff like that, which are all good, you know, but this is, I suppose, more psychological, you know. Yeah. And that to me, again, is something that isn't sort of specific genre. It's got to be done like this, you know, and it allows you to, you know, really get in there and find your own expression, you know, for past trauma, if you like, or the things that sort of unsettle yourself, you know. And and with that I can sort of, I can dig in then with the music, because I feel that my response and my feelings on it are an important part of it. You know, it's not just like, oh, well, at this point it needs to be saying such and such. You know, it actually becomes about how I'm responding to it. You know, and there's room for that in films like this. You know, and that's what attracts me.
Were you from the Clint scene? There was a quite a sort of specific temp score on there, did that mean that you knew what you wanted? You were quite clear. And did Clint coming in, did he shift that at all, you know, in terms of kind of going, did it surprise you?
I think like the temp score is really useful for, you know, rhythm and for the editing of the film. But in terms of, I think what we were trying to find was always kind of the soul of the film, and that was always to be discovered, you know, like the character of it, like the personality of it, like voicing stuff that we can't see, voicing trees and voicing wind and voicing earth and voicing people who were burnt at the stake, but who's, you know, the only thing that's left of these ashes. And so it was interesting what you said also about like that, the hint of something at the beginning. And I guess like visually and musically, it kind of works as a fairy tale a bit in terms of coming back to similar imagery or similar sounds, but each time they sort of mean something different. And it was so amazing seeing Clint, like when he was recording the vocals as well, like working on the performance of the singers, you know, to see and the vocalist to work. For example, there's a younger voice that sort of is the voice of young Alice in a way, and seeing like how she gains in confidence throughout the performance, you know, so the performance of her at the beginning is very fragile. And then as she sort of, as her voice of her child herself, like reclaims itself, you know, her voice is more confident.
Wow.
And it was so beautiful seeing that, and seeing that kind of development, I guess, of that character. And it's cool because it's obviously the story of someone also reclaiming their voice. And so quite literally, you know, it's kind of cool that she's got like a whole gang of girls behind her.
A lovely story in terms of, you know, it going like you were just saying there, Clint, about you being able to put kind of yourself into what you're writing, but also, you know, your amazing collaborators in what's being created have got a relevance to the story. That's amazing, really, in a way.
The beautiful thing about it is that, you know, I know I've said this before, but the best collaborations are, you know, ones where you sort of end up nowhere you would have expected, you know, and you certainly couldn't have got there on your own, you know, and that's because you start off with these, you know, rudimentary ideas and elements, and as you work on them, they start having a life of their own, and then ideas come through again. Okay, well, the voice for Nika when we have the flashbacks is going to be a solo voice saying fragile and whatever, and this, as you can see, Alice slash Nika, like Shart says, growing and regaining her voice. All this power and the power of the witches from the ashes all joining her, you know, it just goes, okay, that's really helping us develop the arc of the story and the arc of the music, you know, and it's, they're just little things that grow just by working on it, you know, and you've got the ideas and suddenly I'm not saying they write themselves, they don't, but they push you, you know, going, okay, this is what we need now, you know, this is what you've given us, and in response, we want this back from you, you know. Those are the things that are, you know, really make this job great. You know, I love it when that happens. It was a lot of fun to work on, to be honest. I mean, seeing this sort of retribution and scoring it was a lot of fun. And, you know, bearing in mind we were doing it through lockdown as well, you know, so we were never in the same room, you know, so it was a lot of Zooms like this, you know, and, back and forth of trying to, you know, trying to find the music and the feel, you know. And it was, I guess, because we started off, I mean, we'd been in lockdown for a while when I first got the film, but they were in the darker days, you know. And weirdly, by the time we finished the film, things had become, we'd kind of grown as a society to some degree, you know, because things were getting better by the time we were sort of actually recording the film. So it was, I don't know, it's had some earthly parallels, I guess.
It's so great. I mentioned kind of the cast, you mentioned Alice, but all the cast as well, and even the location. I wanted to ask, you know, I'm not trying to be kind of ambassador for Visit Scotland, but, you know, kind of, but why Scotland? Was there a specific reason based on your research and stuff? Because obviously Scotland's got that kind of amazing history with kind of, you know, the witchcraft, particularly weirdly around my neck of the woods in the East Coast, and amazing stories about kind of these incredible women who were, you know, unfortunately burned at the stake and stuff, but all that kind of thing.
So the story was always set in Scotland, and I love Scotland so much. I think it's like so magical. Like, it is just the landscape itself is completely like one of those storybooks, you know, of like old-fashioned fairy tales, and the mist, the weather, the culture is so strong, the sort of identity is so strong. And the smell of Edinburgh, for example, is so incredible, that amazing, you know, wood burning, wintry, amazing smell. And when we shot in sort of the cabin scenes and stuff was up next to Aviemore, and the Cairnhorns and stuff, which is so beautiful. It's insane. Like, the skies seriously are bigger than anywhere else. I think, I don't know how it's possible. Not, but it's like nuts, these enormous skies, and and this incredibly dense earth. And apparently there's like a push at the moment to push for peat, reusing peat in Scotland and stuff. And there was some, apparently there's an effect or something that happens when the air condenses around peat, you get these sort of white shadows of smoke that come out, and they're called the white ladies. And I always thought there's something so incredible about, like, because obviously peat is obviously fossil, like actually
it's
thousands of years old, like all life, isn't it insane? I mean, it's just crazy. Yeah, so the depth of it is crazy. And and it was also the last location where there were these two women, Helen and Janet, who were the last, Helen was the last woman executed for witchcraft, and she was from just around the corner. And so there's that crazy history that's, as you say, that was there. It's always mad how many, like, proportionally there was such a high rate of women executed, or people, it wasn't only women, but mostly it was women, executed for witchcraft. And obviously there's those great girls, the Witches of Scotland, who are campaigning up in Scotland. They're great.
It's really great that the stories are being brought into contemporary stories, you know, those kind of old folklore stories have been brought into contemporary ways of, I guess, drawn attention to them in a way as well.
And it feels so relevant, don't they, now? It feels quite terrifyingly relevant.
Before we finish as well, I want to mention the beautiful Echo and the Bunnymen cover at the end as well, which is just like, oh, whoa, kind of just like, I had a moment, actually. I was just like, yeah, it was so, so great. Great choice. What was the kind of thought process behind that?
They're a group called Nouvelle Vague. They're really kind of amazing. I met them actually after, because they came and did a concert in London, and I was like, we used your song, we've got to go meet you. Just went over to meet them. And they basically set up this band with Camille and with these amazing girls, and they were doing covers of songs. And it was so funny because they're now quite, you know, established. And I asked them, God, how do you do that? How do you get the rights to do covers of songs? And they're like, you don't, you just sing them. I was like, oh, wow, that's incredible. So anyway, so they're really, they're really amazing. I thought that cover was amazing, and we actually used it a lot during the shoot. as one of the songs, that one and the song in the pub as well, Region. So it felt perfect and we were lucky to use it.
And thoughts and sweets and stuff. What did the performances influence that, would you say? You know, both Alice, but also, you know, we haven't mentioned Malcolm McDowell, you know, in terms of, even though he's not on screen loads, his actions and his presence are very much felt.
Yeah, undoubtedly, you know, because and the same with the editing as well. They dictate the sort of the pacing and the tone, you know. It's those feelings and experiences that I'm sort of joining in with, really, you know. So inevitably, you know, because you're watching the film and you're getting the feel of the film from them, you know. So finding or feeling their performances and finding a way to weave in with them is key, really. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Amazing. Well, listen, I can't wait to kind of just get people, you know, encourage people to go and see it. I really want to go and see it in a really big cinema as well, with a really big, brilliant sound system as well.
Me too.
It's the only way to listen to Clint's music properly as well. So yeah.
Yes, totally.
Yeah, definitely. And it's beautiful as well. I mean, it just looks like, I mean, it's, I know that you've got such a great, you know, your career, Charlotte, is creative, you know, it's whether that's photography and sculpt and all sorts of different things. And you can just see your kind of, your eye and how beautiful visually the film looks as well. It's like every shot's almost kind of like the most kind of beautiful piece of photography. It's just, yeah,
it's
stunning. It really, really is. It's rich and glorious. Yeah,
I haven't seen it on the big screen yet. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, you should. And listen, thank you so much for your time. It really is a proper treat to get to chat to you about it. And yeah, I hope this is a, you know, a relationship that continues as well, because it's this collaboration's just been mint.
Thank you. Thank you for
thanks,
having us,
Charlotte. Thanks,
thank son. You so, bye, so much.
From the score to She Will, that's Invocation, rounding off this latest episode of Soundtrackin' with the wonderful Charlotte Kober and Clint Mansell. My huge thanks to Charlotte and Clint for taking the time to join me. You can find screenings of She-Ra in select cinemas. Go see it. It needs to be seen and heard on the big screen. But it will also be available to watch on home entertainment formats. Now, it's not the first time, of course, that Clint has been on the podcast, and also not the first time he's been on the podcast with a director. We've had him luckily join us with Mr. Duncan Jones and Mr. Ben Wheatley. So head to edithbowman.com if you'd like to hear those previous conversations. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. We are at Soundtracking UK. And do send us an email, as I said, at info@edithbowman.com. Now, very excited because coming up in the coming weeks, we're going to be talking about Mr. Malcolm's List, Bullet Train as well. But next week, something slightly different. A gentleman who's a director, he's worked in film and TV and music videos, and his new project is a unique being. I was lucky enough to go along and watch ABBA Voyage, this phenomenal live experience of ABBA at the ABBA Arena at the weekend, and I'm very excited to share my chat with director Bailey Walsh with you next week. So, talking all things ABBA Voyage with Bailey Walsh on next week's show. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.